From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from the KVRF 89.5 studios in Palmer, Alaska, radiofreepalmer.org. All of our live stream and stream shows can be heard on Radio Free Palmer's website, as well as ours on dogworksradio.com. Make sure you follow us over on Facebook and Twitter. Search for Dog Works Radio, and you will hear all about it. On the line, calling in from a parking lot at a grocery store, our co-host for Dog Works Radio, Michelle Forto. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going pretty well.
What is happening? It is warm up here in Alaska today. It feels like it's Denver.
It does feel like it's Denver, and I can attest to the fact that it is too hot today to leave your dog in the car while you go in the grocery store. So even in Alaska, people need to be aware that it is pretty warm in the car today.
You know, I think with Facebook and Twitter, that particular cause has really started a fury this year. You see all kinds of videos and news stories coming about where people are walking up and breaking into people's cars and calling the cops, and the cops are coming and breaking into the cars to save the pets and, of course, try to save kids left in cars as well. We all know about the stories where the kids have died, where the parents go into work and leave them there either intentionally or not intentionally. But that's becoming a major problem throughout the United States. What is your opinion of that, Michelle, and how can we alleviate it?
You know, I think awareness and education is priority. You never should leave your kids in the car unattended, even for a moment, not just because of the heat, but there's other issues there that arise. But the same goes for your pet. I mean, Robert, you've got stories of your own where your mom didn't leave you guys in the car, but your brother at 3 years of age was still able to knock that car in gear and take you guys on a ride across a very busy highway with your mom being dragged alongside the car. So, you know, kids and dogs and other pets and vehicles left unattended don't mix. But as far as breaking windows and going to that extreme, you know, I would hope that people would go back into the store and ask the store to page the person with the vehicle license number and warn them, hey, we're going to get your child out. We're going to get your pet out. Your vehicle is being broken into at this moment. Get outside. You know, maybe send somebody else in while you help attend to the child or the dog that's in the car. I don't place any higher value on a child or a dog in that situation. It's too hot. A lot of people don't understand that 5 minutes in the store is not that big of a deal. But when it's 75 degrees outside like it is right now in Alaska, that means that it's about 90 degrees in my car. And, you know, I'm not a big sweaty type of a person, but I'm beginning to perspire. I've been sitting in the car for about 25 minutes. And, no, it's not running, and, yes, my windows are cracked about halfway down, but there's not a lot of air circulating in the car, even with the windows halfway down.
That is right. Have you had a chance to see the video on YouTube, Facebook, wherever, of the dog? I believe he's in England. It's a boxer that has his paw on the horn, and he's stuck in the car, locked in the car with the windows up, and he's just laying on the horn like nobody's business. Have you had a chance to see that one, Michelle?
No, but I have personally witnessed a Siberian Husky puppy left in the car at a grocery store up here during the winter time. So, you know, it was cold, but the dog wasn't suffering of any harsh inclement weather or being too hot in the car or even being too cold in the car. But I witnessed that Siberian Husky tear up that vehicle from one side to the other, including the steering wheel and honking the horn, in a matter of 20 minutes.
Dogs can do destructive things when they're left alone, especially dogs that have that little bit of a separation issue, whether it's honking that horn or trashing the car. You know, we take our dogs a lot of places when we go out and about. And again, up here in Alaska, it's typically much cooler than it is today. But I wonder why people feel the need to take all of their dogs in their cars when they go grocery shopping. I don't quite understand the phenomenon behind that, why you would load up several dogs in your car just to drive to the grocery store for a half an hour and turn around and come home.
You know, I think it comes down to training, and I don't think it's just one dog or three dogs or whatever it is. A lot of times people do not do proper training with their dogs when they are at home for the dogs to be prepared on how to handle the person not being home. A lot of people I know will take their dogs with them when they're puppies in the car for short trips and things, and that is recommended, but it's not recommended that you leave that same puppy inside the vehicle while it is extremely warm outside. And, you know, 75 degrees doesn't sound that bad. It sounds like a rocking nice day, which it absolutely is a gorgeous day here in Alaska. But 75 degrees is warm for Alaskans. It's warm for Alaskan dogs because we're typically used to much cooler, much colder temperatures, you know. 75 degrees in Arizona and Colorado is a surely nice day, but 75 degrees up here would feel more like 100 degrees to us down there.
All right, so let's get into our topic today. We hear this question all the time, and I would say at our training business, it comes up at least twice a week when people are calling us for information. And I know we've talked about this on several shows before, but we always have a little bit more to add to it. And, of course, people don't go back into a library of 500 shows to try to pick out one particular episode or another. So we're going to visit this topic again, and we're going to talk about the difference between a service dog and a therapy dog. This is Michelle's area of expertise at our training business. And, of course, as I said, many of people ask this question all the time, or they say, I would like to have a certified therapy dog go with my son to school, or they'll say, I need a service dog to help calm children at the hospital. They often interchange the two roles of these dogs, and it's an entirely different training process and a different dog in general, isn't it, Michelle?
Not necessarily a different dog in general, but the definition is misused and misinterpreted on a multitude of levels. A lot of times, too, it's because a medical professional is referring the client to get an assistance dog, and that's where the language really gets mixed up with the definitions, because assistance dogs across the nation are two different things. An assistance dog is no longer recognized by the Americans with Disability Act as a service dog because it's listed as an emotional support dog, a skilled companion. Those dogs are not recognized any longer as service dogs. So that's where a lot of this language terminology barrier comes into play, is that the medical professional will recommend the person get an assistance dog. An assistance dog is not a service dog any longer. An assistance dog is also not a therapy dog. A therapy dog is owned by a person and taken to medical facilities, libraries, reading programs with kids, hospices, nursing homes, some respite care providers will take them with them when they do in-home care and things like that. That's what a therapy dog is. Therapy dogs are becoming more and more widely used in school environments as well for our special education teachers as well as our psychologists and counselors that are at the schools. So more and more we're finding that that therapy dogs are entering the school system, which is really awesome because there are so many mainstream school programs now that are being developed to include kids of all varying degrees of disabilities to become part of the mainstream environment at school and not just be sheltered down to that one or two classroom down at the end of the corridor, which we referred to when we were growing up as special ed.
So that is the therapy dog. As you mentioned, typically it's a team of the person and the dog, and they visit and require therapy in some form or another to a person or a group of people, not necessarily the person that's handling the dog. Is that correct?
Yes, and the one thing with the therapy dog is, you know, you and your neighbor girlfriend can't get your two dogs together and just all of a sudden show up at the nursing home up the road and go in for a visit. You need to be cleared by the administrative staff and have permission to be in there. You should make sure that you have your homeowner's insurance should include your dog. If you're not working with a company like Pet Partners, which was formerly known as Delta Society, Delta Society Pet Partners, they train you and your dog, and then they assign you locations to visit, which is really awesome. And they provide insurance for you. So look that up in your area. Another place that does specialized training just for their own therapy teams to come in and visit is Children's Hospital. Children's hospitals across the nation have a therapy program for the teams to come in and visit with the kids. And when they do that, you need to be aware that in the children's hospitals, therapy dogs are required to wear T-shirts because there are so many allergies that the kids have. They don't want the kids touching the dogs and getting some sort of allergy that they shouldn't be getting. A lot of people don't understand, but the reason for that is because no matter what the dog eats, it releases some of the toxins and the waste through the dog's hair and fur. That's what we refer to as dander. That's what makes dogs give people allergies and things. So if you're feeding your dog a raw food diet, like a lot of mushers do, and a lot of breeders of working dogs will feed their dogs raw chicken and raw beef and pork. And what happens with that is you can spread E. coli to someone that is susceptible to it. Mushers and breeders, they're not susceptible to those toxins because they're around the dog so much and they're already used to it. Their bodies are used to it. But those are one of the reasons why they wear T-shirts, is to keep the dander away from the kids.
You know, I think more than any person that calls, they want to visit that children's hospital. That seems to be the go-to place where everybody wants to go. But that is not only a very difficult place to get into with your therapy team, but also probably the one place where they don't need very many teams. Is that right?
That is correct. And the other thing, too, is I know the Children's Hospital in Denver, Colorado, they have a waiting list for people to get in with their teams. And what they do is they put people on the list as a team member for, like, 2 years. So they try to make the teams brand new every couple of years. But, you know, if you've got a two-year-old dog that just passed therapy certification, which is the age that is appropriate for a therapy dog to start working, because where are you going to practice? What are you going to do in the interim while you wait for your turn to go visit the kids? I would say that more people are needed in hospice, in shelters, women's shelters, places like that. They need these therapy dogs in those locations. Also, it would be worthwhile to get with your local child protective agencies and your local policing agencies and find out how you can help children in need of aid when they are removed from their homes for whatever reason. Sometimes it's very, very horrific reasons, and sometimes it's reasons that don't make sense to anybody. But those kids are going through a traumatic situation, and that's a good time to have them have a pet visit.
That is exactly true. So let's move on, Michelle. Let's talk about service dogs, the other part of the equation here. As we said, many a times people switch the terms back and forth between therapy and assistance dogs and emotional support and service dogs. But before we get into that, we want to let everybody know that you're listening to DogWorks Radio, dogworksradio.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Search for DogWorks Radio. Michelle, what is a service dog and how do they differ from therapy dogs?
A service dog is a dog that's been specially trained over a two-year program for a specific person and that specific person's disabilities. It could be psychiatric, mobility, medical alert, guide dogs for the blind, guiding for the deaf. Medical alert would be more involved as far as seizure alert, diabetic alert, peanut allergy alert. And then you have the varying degrees of psychiatric. A lot of people are familiar with PTSD service dogs. Those people mostly think of are for soldiers. But you'd be surprised. We have a lot of different types of psychiatric needs that dogs really do help with. But for the public, they need to understand that when these people have their dogs out in public, it is for a very specific reason. They're not trying to buck the system or take their dog into Target because it's too hot in the car, so I'll just take my dog inside with me. But on the same note, I want people to understand there are a lot of people doing just that, not leaving their dogs in the car and taking them inside and passing them off as service dogs when they have no business saying that they are. And that's causing a lot of problems for people that do have legitimate disabilities with access to going to the grocery store, going shopping, going out to eat. As you well know, Robert, we covered a program, three or four years ago on our DogWorks Radio program where we discussed a lot of issues in New York City with restaurants barring people with service dogs to even come in and have a glass of water. Because other patrons were feeding the dogs because they felt sorry for the dog because the dog wasn't allowed to eat while the handler ate.
That is true, and you can hear that episode just by searching our archives. It was a couple of years ago. Michelle, we just have a couple of minutes left here on our brief time on the show today. Real quickly, what should people be looking for when they're looking for a service dog? I know a lot of companies out there will train dogs that were obtained from other places, whether it's the individual's dog or they got that puppy for the person that needs the need. What should they be looking for? They should not be looking for that extremely hyperactive puppy, should they?
No, and, you know, they should consult with a trainer, even if it's not a service dog trainer. You should consult with a trainer, explain to them what your goal is for the dog, and then what you want to make sure is that you pick a puppy, whether it's a shelter dog or not. I would really recommend not a shelter dog. You don't know what kind of issues that dog had, and it brings about a whole bunch of behavioral problems that can arise later on. But if you go to a breeder and you're going to pick out a puppy for your needs for service, make sure that you understand what it is that you need. You don't want that exuberant puppy that came blasting out of the pile of puppies and ran up to you right away and licked you and was so happy to see you. You want the one that was a little bit lower to come and visit you, did visit you, walked away, and then returned to you with much more interest when the other puppies weren't around you. You want to be able to turn that puppy onto its back in your arms, cradling it like a baby. If it relaxes immediately and makes eye contact with you and doesn't try to squeeze your arm off with its paws and posture its back and twist and turn and try to throw himself out of your arms, then that's the one that you want. You want the one that relaxes immediately. You want to hold it up above your head without dropping it or throwing it and see how it reacts to that. You want to make a loud clapping noise. There's lots of variables that go into picking the right puppy for your service. And what you're looking for there is a balanced temperament.
Very good. Michelle, we are out of time here on today's episode of Dog Works Radio. We will be back next Wednesday, 5 p.m. Alaska time. That would be 9 p.m. Eastern time for folks to listen before they head off to bed. Michelle, thank you very much for talking about the differences between service dogs and assistance dogs. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.